Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lorne, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo, working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can also watch me play in the Adventurous, Stellar, and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about Daeth.
Before we get started, we want to say that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we do want to remind you that we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
We all know what death is. Not only because it is the final step in every living thing's journey, but also because it inundates our games and our popular culture so thoroughly and so callously that we almost wholly disregard it. Like, Luis, consider the Mook, right? Mm-hmm. In Mario, Mook be a Goomba. In Doom, it's an imp. Sometimes the Mook is a bandit or a cultist. The Mook doesn't have a name. It doesn't have unique dialogue. The Mook only exists to get killed by the player for tiny amounts of loot and tiny amounts of XP. For better or for worse, we're so used to the Mook's death carrying virtually none of the weight that a beloved character's death does. But when a character dies in anything, it can affect us in ways that resonate into our real lives as well, if it's been something that we've been invested in. At the tabletop, you're not just losing an asset that helps you win fights. You might also be losing a close friend that you've spent a lot of time with. And in Pathfinder, death is the prize you earn for making mistakes, for heroic sacrifices, or just for rolling bad.
Yep, and death specifically in Pathfinder 2nd Edition hasn't changed much from 1st Edition. And in fact, I would say it got buffed between editions. If you ever take the time to read about the dead condition in 1st Edition, it says some things here and there, but it never specifically states that you can't take actions and stuff, which common sense, of course, dictates. Yeah, you're dead. You can't do anything, but if you're a real stickler for the rules, you know, it doesn't say you can't keep fighting or anything. It just says what it says there. But in the 2nd Edition conditions, it specifically says you can't do anything. You're dead. So, yeah, death got a buff, and it doesn't look like they're thinking about nerfing it anytime soon, so death is still a part of the game, and something to be very afraid of sometimes, especially for the fact that counteracting the effects of death is a lot harder nowadays, too.
I've got to say, I would like to be the GM at a table where somebody said, I might be dead, but the rules don't say I can't attack. Because I feel like that takes some balls. That takes some audacity to to say that to your GM with a straight face. And I would be so impressed, I think I'd let him have it. I think I'd be like, you know what? Yeah, you keep fighting. But I wouldn't make it like an easy thing for him or something. Like, maybe for each round that they continue fighting, a piece of their soul just fully just fragments off. And after like 5 rounds or something, maybe they ain't got no soul left. They're just fully destroyed. I don't know. It's interesting. I can think of some really creative mechanics if the player had the gumption to try and pull that off on me.
It would lead to a very interesting situation. And you know what? A last hurrah as like their body stirs about and tries to keep fighting would be pretty fun, I think.
I like it. So let's talk about how death got buffed in Pathfinder 2nd Edition. I know because it has some more cut-and-paste rules now, it's also a little bit more complicated. So let's talk about the process of going from the living to the unliving.
Well, it all starts with your hit points. Turns out you can have as many hit points as you like as long as that valley doesn't say zero. But the moment you hit zero, that's when things start changing. If you are an NPC or a monster, typically you just die right then and there. It says most creatures, when they reach zero hit points, they die and are removed from play unless the attack was non-lethal, in which case they are instead knocked out for a little while. Undead and constructs are utterly destroyed. Their bodies are just fall apart, destroyed. But player characters, being the special people that they are, don't automatically die when they reach zero hit points, and instead they begin dying. They are knocked out, and then they are at risk of death, but not necessarily dead just yet.
The first thing that a player at zero hit points is going to do is move their initiative to right before the creature that hit you. That way, the whole party has a full round to try and do something about it. Second thing you do is you get a few conditions to your character. You gain the unconscious condition, which means you're going to drop all your held stuff, go prone, be blind, be flat-footed, and take an additional -4 to your AC, perception, and reflex saves. Overall, that's a total of -6 to your AC, which is really, really rough.
In addition to being knocked unconscious, you also gain one other condition called dying. Dying has a value, and depending on how you got knocked out, how you got brought down to zero hit points, you might either end up at dying 1 or dying 2, assuming this is the first time you're going down in a given encounter. By default, you're knocked down to dying 1. If you went down as a result of a critical, either someone hit you with a critical success, or you had a critical failure against a save or something like that, you are reduced to dying 2 instead. And then, from there, you have to start trying to see if you recover.
Now, while dying, at the start of each of your turns, you'll make a recovery flat check. Okay? So you're just going to throw a d20, you're going to hope for the best, and you ain't going to add nothing to it. Your DC is going to be 10 plus your dying value. So on your first turn, it's probably dying 1, so your DC is 11. But if you fail that, the next check you're making is a DC 12, and it just keeps going up until you reach dying 4, and then you're immediately donezo. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. How much do you collect when you pass go?
$200.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. Depending on the result of your recovery check, you will reduce your value or increase your value. A critical success reduces it by 2. Normal success reduces it by 1. Or you can increase it by 1 or increase it by 2 on a critical failure. And as Lauren mentioned, reaching a result of dying 4 means you're dead, unless you happen to have the die hard feat, which says you die at dying 5. So that's cool. If, let's say, things are going well for you and you reduce your dying value back to 0, you then remove your dying value entirely, because it's dying 0, and add the wounded condition to yourself. You become wounded 1 the very first time you remove dying, and if you haven't lost your wounded condition, eventually, every time you recover from dying, you increase that wounded value by 1. Wounded will come into play if you go down again in the same combat, or you know, maybe later if you haven't had time to recover. We'll skip that for now. We're just talking about hitting dying 0. If you hit dying 0, you don't automatically recover a hit point. You remain at 0 hit points, but you've lost your dying condition. You now have the wounded condition. And left unattended, you will naturally regain 1 hit point and wake up after a sufficient amount of time passes. Usually that might be anywhere from 10 minutes to several hours, depending on what the GM decides. I tend to lean on the after an hour you will recover this. If at any point you're healed, if your hit points are restored, you start from 0, restore any hit points. As long as you restore to at least 1 hit point or more via healing, you automatically lose your dying condition and unconscious condition, and you wake up. You're still on the ground because you fell over and you still dropped all your stuff, but you're now immediately awake as opposed to naturally recovering and getting to dying 0 where you're still unconscious. At that point, you can decide to act normally. I recommend getting away from the fray if combat's still going on, but it's up to you what you want to do at that point.
Now, one of the reasons that I think death is so much deadlier in Pathfinder 2nd Edition is because every time you take damage while you already have the dying condition, you increase it by 1. And remember, if you get crit, you increase it by 2. So, and when you stack all of the negatives that you have for being unconscious and you have that total of minus 6, it's now really easy to get a coup de grace as a villain comes up and just ends your life with a almost free critical hit. Even if it's their third attack and at minus 10, they still have a pretty good chance of increasing your dying condition just by themselves. And on top of that, even if the GM isn't trying to kill the characters by having them finish off heroes, which, spoiler alert, is what I would do if I was playing a smart villain. Come on. A smart villain knows that heroes inexplicably get up in the middle of combat all the time. A smart villain's going to be like, nah, fam, I'm just going to finish you off. But even if the GM isn't playing that kind of game, if persistent or poison damage is on your character when you go into the dying conditions, those don't go away. At the end of your turn, when persistent or poison damage would happen, it will continue to happen. And each time that you take that damage, your dying condition will increase by 1 or 2. If you have poison damage and persistent damage, and you critically fail one of those, you can just outright die, just immediately, you know? Or better yet, you don't even have to fail, you don't have to critically fail. Fail them both. Okay, regular failure there. Well, I guess really with persistent damage, you don't even have to fail it. It happens.
Yep.
Yeah. And then if you don't make your first recovery check, you just die immediately. They are so brutal to have persistent and poison damage. So you really, if you're low on hit points and you still are alive, you really want to try and get rid of those as fast as you can, because that could be game over. In addition to that, the doomed condition is super deadly, because your dying threshold is normally 4. You hit dying 4, you immediately die. The doom condition also comes with a number, 1, 2, or 3. And it reduces that dying threshold by that much. So if you were doomed 1, when you tick into dying 3, you immediately die.
Going back to persistent damage real quick, I just want to clarify a few things, order of operations on how things work. As mentioned, when you're dying, you make your recovery check at the start of your turn. So, as Lauren mentioned, it's entirely possible, if things are very unlucky for you, that you will hit dying 1, your turn will come around, and then you immediately have to make your recovery check as you start your turn. If you fail that, then your dying value increases. And then at the end of your turn, which is when persistent damage always goes off, then you will take damage from the persistent damage effects and possibly increase your dying value even more. So it's entirely possible, with some bad rolls or just enough effects on you right away, that you will just die before anyone can do anything after 1 round. So.
And poison damage is an end of the turn situation too.
At least poison damage, though, if depending on how it's working, assuming you've been poisoned, you might have a chance to do a fortitude save and prevent that damage if you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
But at this rate, if you have your persistent damage and your poison damage and you're dying, it sounds like luck isn't on your side. And that might be a reason to hold on to a hero point, which I'll talk about in just a bit here. But all this dying stuff has happened. There's all these different ways to die. I mentioned you can get back up, though, if you recover and stuff, and you would become wounded. What does wounded mean? Well, by default, when you're acting and fighting in combat, nothing. Wounded doesn't mean anything. But the moment you go down again, if you are wounded, you add your wounded value to your dying value. So let's say you went down once, you went to dying 1, and then came back. Now I'm wounded 1. And then I go down again because I only had 1 hit point because I was a dummy and didn't choose to run away. All right, I'm wounded 1 and I got hit down. And instead of going down to dying 1 immediately, I add dying 1 to my wounded 1 and now I'm dying 2. Or potentially dying 3 if it was a crit. So you got to make sure you clear your wounded condition when you get a chance, because it will very much snowball and lead to your death, and that could be very bad. To do that, you'll just want to treat wounds with medicine, and that will eventually clear the wounded condition, or I think you can just naturally recover to get rid of wounded. Let me look right
so here. Full hit points and 10 minutes of rest.
Yes. 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 If you are either restored to full hit points and rest for 10 minutes, or if someone successfully restores hit points with treat wounds, you don't have to get back to full health with treat wounds. As long as someone does the treat wounds action, that clears all of your wounded condition. But keep in mind, if you're wounded, you are very likely to die, so try to stay safe out there.
Now, listeners, if you're like me, the whole wounded system kind of gets a little bit confusing just because it feels like there's a lot of moving parts, but there really isn't. This is how I want you to picture it, okay? You go into dying. You come back out of dying. You just put a sticker on your character, a little red sticker that's got like a blood drop on it, okay? Next time you go to dying, just increase it by the number of stickers you got. That's wounded. That's all it does. Now, in addition to dying, in addition to death via the dying condition, there are some ways to just circumvent that and just immediately die. For example, if you get hit by a spell or an effect that has the death trait, and that takes you to zero, we skipping all of this dying nonsense. We're just go ahead and start making a new character because you dead, son. In addition to that, massive damage is still a thing in this. If you ever take twice your maximum hit points in damage, again, do not pass go. Do not collect $200. What class are you going to pick for your new character? Because you dead.
Yeah, and another note about death condition or death effects. Some of them don't even have to wait till you hit zero hit points. Some of them just decide to kill you outright before you just hit zero. Let's take a little spell called Phantasmal Killer, where if you critically fail on your will save and then you fail your fortitude save, you die, even if you were at maximum hit points. You just die because you got scared to death. Too bad.
Too spooky.
But all these buffs to death, at the very least, the designers were kind enough to at least had a little way to cheat death. Lauren, tell me about heroic recovery.
Okay, so I have two thoughts about heroic recovery. On one hand, I hate it because it's as a player, I hate it because it's mandatory. Here's how this works. If you have a hero point, you can spend all of your hero points at the start of your turn or any time you would increase your dying condition to wake up with one hit point, lose all dying conditions, and not gain the wounded condition. So the reason this frustrates me is because now you kind of have to save one hit point unless it's just really, unless your insurance policy isn't worth it at the time. But like, when is it not worth it? Like, right? Like, you gotta have the hero point. But GMs, listen, take heed. This is why if players do something extremely awesome, you gotta be handing them out hero points. That way they're able to start spending them.
Yep. And again, as mentioned earlier, it brings you to one hit point and you are conscious, but you're still on the ground and you still dropped all your stuff. So it is a heroic recovery, but not a mythic, amazing, get back up on your feet instantly recovery. You still got to pick up your stuff and get up off the ground, which, leaves you vulnerable still. So keep that in mind.
And one of the things interesting about heroic recovery is you don't put a sticker on your character sheet. You ain't getting wounded.
Yeah, it's the safest way to get up, but it does use up all of those precious, precious hero points.
So if I was sitting on a stack of hero points, Luis, tell me if there's any reason I couldn't do this, right? Every time I fail my flat check, I'd just spend one to reroll it until I get to my last hero point, and then I'd die. I'm like, nah, this heroic recovery.
There is one limitation there in that rerolling with the hero point adds the fortune trait to your roll. So the fortune trait is there whenever you roll twice and take the better, or misfortune for the opposite, roll twice, take the worse. And you can only ever have one fortune trait or one misfortune trait in effect on a given roll. So you can only ever use your hero point to reroll once. So you could do it every turn up until you're going to get to dying four, but you can't do it on the single roll and then blast through six hero points or whatever, even mm-hmm. though you couldn't have that many. But anyway, so yes, so there's a limitation there, but that doesn't stop you from trying to reroll if that fails, then using heroic recovery, because you're not rerolling there, you're just doing heroic recovery.
So most of the time, I would argue that avoiding death is preferable. But it does happen, right? Yeah. So what really should a player or a GM be doing when a character dies?
Well, there's a few different things you can do. If you are of the older school mentality, you can try to bring that character back. There are ways via spells and rituals and maybe a few class effects here and there. I don't remember off the top of my head. But for sure there's some spells, for sure there's some rituals that you can use to bring characters back. Unfortunately, most of those are uncommon, so you don't just immediately have access to those. But if for some reason you happen to have 10th level spells, you might be able to use a miracle or a wish spell to bring someone back. If you do the work, you can find the raise dead spell somehow and use that to bring someone back. Or if you do the work, you can find the reincarnation and resurrection rituals to try to bring someone back. So those all work for bringing someone back. Or your GM might be kind and put you on some epic quest to go bring that character back. But, you know, that's essentially the same as putting in the work to find an uncommon item. So.
And as ritual spells, they're a little bit more accessible. Reincarnation's only level 3, and Resurrection's level 5. So this is something that would be very feasible for characters to impart on a journey, to find the spells, collect the pages that will let them bring back a beloved character.
Yeah. And even better, unlike first edition, you don't have to have a divine caster to do these particular rituals. Anyone can do it. If the fighter and the monk and the barbarian get together, they can bring back their good friend, the wizard.
So at what point, though, do you throw in the towel and say, you know, I'm just going to roll up a new character?
And I think that's up to everyone. I mean, it's a case-by-case basis. Maybe you feel satisfied with that character's storyline. They went out in the glory of battle and it was a great ending for them, and you know, bringing them back to life would lessen the meaning of that death. Or maybe you just get tired of playing that particular character and you want a new class. Who knows?
I kind of have a little personal rule of thumb as a player where I'm never going to allow one of my dead characters to come back to life. But I do have an exception to that. If it's a particularly beloved character of mine, or maybe we've spent 2 years in a game and it wasn't a heroic sacrifice, it was just a string of bad luck, I might be okay with like a really cool story reason to try and bring that back, you know, like going through the process. But it should always have some type of permanent effect. You know, like your character's not going to come back and be sunshine and roses. You have seen the other side. You will be just a little bit different, maybe a little bit worse for the wearer.
And beyond that, maybe as a GM, you don't want to kill off those characters just yet. You have control of the story to such a degree that you can decide, oops, that didn't happen just yet. You might decide that at the last second, that character's deity intervenes and saves them, you know, or it turns out that the enemies captured that dead PC and brought them back to life themselves, or kept them from becoming dead. You know, they at the last moment treated their wounds and were able to keep them from dying. You know, it really depends. You might say, actually, you didn't die, but that wound to your shoulder is such that you have a detriment, and now swinging swords with your left hand is more difficult, so you who were a two-hander now might have to rely on using that as a shield, a shield hand and something like that. Who knows? There's different ways that you can kind of hand wave the death away and keep them around. I recommend not just being like, oops, you didn't die, let's keep going. Give the PCs something to have to struggle against for a while and let them keep going.
So when Pathfinder 2nd Edition first came out, I ran my home group through a little story that I made to kind of introduce them to Pathfinder. And they were low level. I looked up the difficulty chart in the core rulebook, and I felt like I had a nice series of encounters that wasn't too hard, and then the boss was a little bit hard. I learned a valuable lesson that day when they all died without even scratching the boss. The difficulty in 2nd edition is way higher. So, but these characters were kind of cool. Like, I have a very unique character creation method when I'm the GM, and I kind of help them guide themselves through it so that they make a character that comes out the other side that's interesting and that they feel like they're invested in and have relationships between each other. So a TPK really sucks in one of my games. So what we did, kind of on the spot, because I was in a little bit of a panic mode, after they all died, the drunk of the party finished telling his story of woe, finished telling his prediction at the campsite. And then they went into whatever they were going to do the next day. Maybe it wasn't the best, but in a pinch, you gotta do what you gotta do, right?
Yep.
Now, normally here on Legend Lore, we like to give you a personal side. How do you use these? How does it work? From our perspective, typically I'm bringing a Viking to the table, but you never know. This time, I think we could talk about some of our favorite stories of encountering death in Pathfinder.
Yeah, I have. Oh, boy. So, my typical group for the longest time was just three players. So, even one death could be enormously disruptive. So, when running my Hell's Rebels Adventure Path campaign, and I had two player deaths in one combat, I thought that might have been the end of it, but I asked them, hey, I think I have a solution for this. Do you all want to keep playing? They said yes. So I took those two players aside on a like short little stint on a different day and basically explained to them how their souls traveled up the River of Souls and eventually made it to Nirvana and all this other stuff. They faced judgment before Phirasma and all this cool stuff, and got to see all this fantastical imagery. There was no dice or anything, it was just me sitting there and maybe asking them a couple questions. Oh, you see this person, what do you do, blah 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 blah, and all these images that they were seeing, all this cool stuff along the way, was actually foreshadowing for stuff that was to come later in the AP. Ultimately, it ended with them getting a chance to see their potential features, not knowing that it was their potential features, and standing before Phirasma, and then her basically saying, oh, no, not yet. And then they're waking up in a jail, you know, hundreds of miles from Kintargo. But it was a kind of a fun experience to, like, transition into that, but also get to experience death for a little while. And later on, they were like, oh, that's why this happened, and that's why we saw this and that. So it was pretty fun to play with, but Phirasma knows that heroes are such that they don't tend to stay dead. Specifically, player characters don't tend to stay dead, so she's okay with sending you back and letting you hang out for a while, but letting you get back to work with whatever you were doing.
I absolutely love that take on it, especially the part where you're kind of foreshadowing what's coming and they don't even know it. Mm-hmm. I think that's tremendous storytelling, and that's probably why they pay you the big bucks.
Oh, man, I wish I got paid to GM. Who knows?
Now, I want to give you a story from the player's side. I've only had one character die, and that was real early into my tabletop career. I don't feel like we handled it particularly well, so I want to talk instead about when one of my teammates' characters died. We'd been playing in this 5th edition game, a homebrew world, and we'd been playing for a year, 2 years maybe. We were all real close friends. And my buddy Alex was playing a Warforged cowboy named Winchester. And he heroically sacrificed himself because we were doing an undercover mission that went wrong with some bad rolls. So we had to get on out of the castle before we got captured and killed. And, you know, he heroically threw himself into the oncoming guards, and he died. And, you know, we were all really sad because we're really close. You know, we had these relationships in between the characters. Like, Winchester was basically our mascot because we just all loved him so much. And so we were real sad, you know, in character and out of character. Like, it really hurt. So we did two things. As characters, we recovered his body. And we had a quiet funeral for him off in the woods. We couldn't have a big one, and we couldn't, like, bring a lot of people because we were fugitives, you know. But out on the lam, we did what we could. And, you know, some of the characters said some words. And, you know, we gave it, you know, like, however much time we needed to pay respects. But then we went above and beyond that. That's what the characters did. As players, the next session, we didn't tell Alex, but we all showed up wearing bandanas. And we were all just, you know, and I think we brought, like, extra good snacks that time. One of our group's favorite things to do is every now and then we would treat ourselves by bringing in, like, the nice crackers and the nice cheese. And we had the real nice crackers and the real nice cheese that night. I think we had some whiskey, too. You know, a good cowboy. So that was real fun. His death sucked, and it hurt real bad, but that combination of things kind of gave us some good closure. We kind of felt a little bit better about it.
So death can be a dark and grim subject, but as Lauren said, sometimes it can have nice feeling moments. But speaking of grim things, before we move on to our listener questions, we want to take a moment to tell you about our sponsor, Beetle and Grimm's Complete Character Chronicles, which is now on Kickstarter.
So I looked up the Beetle and Grimm's Complete Character Chronicles for a little bit, and I gotta say, I'm pretty interested in how it takes the Advanced Player's Guide and the Core Rulebook and just puts all of the rules that you need for that character in one place.
Yeah, definitely. And each of the character chronicles are covering one of four different characters: the cleric, fighter, rogue, or wizard, you know, your classic four characters. And each of them has your specific rules. So if you have a fighter, it has all your fighter feats. It has a lot of spots for new fighter feats and all the stuff that you would need from the APG and from the core, as Lauren mentioned. If you're a wizard, it has all your potential spells out there. It's great. It has everything you might need for your given character, so you don't have to lug all your other books around. You just have everything you need in a complete chronicle.
Speaking of what the chronicle covers, have you seen what covers the chronicle? They've got leather covers, and they're gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we're talking about death, and hopefully this doesn't happen with your character, but if need be, this is a complete chronicle. It even has a ready-to-go death certificate for you, so you can write down how you died and put a nice bow on your character story. But who knows, maybe you just write it in the journal instead that you died and came back and saved that death certificate for later.
Now, these days, since most of our gaming is online, I feel like I keep more of my character information on a PDF, which is why it's really cool that Beetle and Grimm's is now offering a PDF version of these Complete Character Chronicles.
Yeah. So, by the time you're listening to this, assuming you listen to this when it comes out, we still have a few days for the Kickstarter. So head on over to Kickstarter, search for Beetle and Grimm's Complete Character Chronicles if you want to hop in on those. They have the PDF versions, they have the the actual printed Chronicles. They have fancy limited edition versions of the Chronicles, and they have lots of other cool accessories. So if you want dice sets or pins or stuff like that, go to Kickstarter and look up the Complete Character Chronicles. Thank you very much to Beetle and Grimms for sponsoring this episode of Legend Lore.
Now, there's one thing that Beetle and Grimms doesn't have, and that's questions from our amazing listeners. From user Brian Lane, do you apply dying and wounded conditions to NPCs and monsters?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, by default, no. But that doesn't mean you can't. In fact, I'm of the opinion that very important boss fights or notable NPCs, you know, the big bad guys of your campaign, maybe do give them the dying condition and all that stuff. But maybe they have some kind of fast healing or regeneration that keeps them going. And I guess that does bring up the fact that characters with regeneration do go into dying, because unless you stop that regeneration, they're going to get back up. So trolls do have to worry about the dying condition and wounded condition and all that stuff. So keep that in mind. But for the most part, your typical skeleton, your typical bandit, nah, they just go down at zero.
If it doesn't have regeneration, I tend to just say everything dies unless the players don't want it to. Like, you know, even if it's just like a lowly bandit, you know, and the player's like, oh, can I get in there and, you know, stabilize real quick? Sure, let's do it. He wasn't dying three and now he's stabilized. Because you never know what kind of really cool and creative things the characters have in mind. You know, let them be creative.
Our next question comes from our patron, Shadows Over Scotland, who asks, now that we're all a bit more used to the dying rules, what kind of advice would you give to a player going down and a party plan in general for healing and getting dying characters back up?
I would say try to deal as much damage as possible while taking as little damage as possible. Shoot the cyber demon until it dies. No, but seriously, you're going to want to rely on healing that doesn't take a lot of actions. In battle, the action economy is already really strained just from doing your offensive actions. When somebody goes down, you're relying on even more offensive actions because you're not getting their actions to contribute to the fight. But you also have to get them back up. So try to have a solution on hand that uses as few actions as possible. Scrolls are great, but you got to pull them out and then use two actions. Potion might be a little bit better because you got to pull it out and then use one action to dump it down their throat. If you can just have a heal spell and use one action to touch somebody real quick, that would help. Just make sure you're planning the actions you need to heal, I'd say, more than the amount of healing.
Yeah. Heal does have the benefit of the two-action heal being at a range, so at the very least, if you can't reach someone right away, you can throw the healing spell. Another good option would be battle medicine. If you happen to have that skill feat, you can use one action to heal someone, assuming you have a free hand to get at your tools. So lots of different ways of doing that. It's tough. The thing I recommend most is trying to get a little bit of healing on someone and then moving on. Don't try to get them up to fighting shape. As long as they are not dying, you should then focus on other stuff, because wasting too much time on trying to get someone up to fighting shape to help you out means you might end up dying too.
After a lot of experience with fighting and the difficulty of second edition, I do think it's more efficient to move your healing to in between combats rather than in the middle of combat when possible. I mean, you got to get somebody up from the dying condition. You got to do what you got to do, right? But, you know, if like Louis said, you can get them to stable and maybe where they can run away, that's probably better than trying to get them up. It's far easier to deal damage than it is to heal damage. From patron Andrew Mullen, could you do a walkthrough of the process for dealing with dying while you're also taking persistent damage? And maybe with folks trying to help stop the persistent damage.
Well, I mentioned earlier the order of things is at the start of your turn, you make your recovery check, which might reduce or increase your dying value, and then at the end of your turn, you take your persistent damage, so it's possible that you increase your dying value multiple times in one go because of that. So persistent damage is very nasty. People who are trying to stop it, I actually recommend the first thing you do is, as mentioned above, heal that person just a little bit. The moment you do that, their dying condition goes away. And then you might try to stop that persistent damage, but that is kind of hard. Aiding to stop a persistent damage effect requires you to spend two actions, and that might end up wasting your, not wasting, using up your entire turn, or you might not even have all the actions to do that. So it really depends. That the safest thing is to get someone healed up, so at the very least they're not dying anymore, and depending on how much healing you get, they might be able to take a little bit of that persistent damage and survive, and hopefully succeed at their flat check so that goes away.
Now, Luis, I know that when you do spend the two actions to aid, it reduces the DC to 10. But does it not keep the DC at 10? And does it not also give you that immediate flat check to try and get rid of the persistent damage? Maybe if you don't have stabilize or a way to heal, that's a way to slow the death.
It is the persistent damage, or you do get a flat check against the persistent damage immediately when you try to aid someone's recovery. I don't remember if the DC becomes permanently reduced.
As per the book, uh-huh, it only says reduce the DC of the flat check to 10 for a particularly appropriate type of health, such as dousing you in water to put out flames.
Okay, that does sound like it is a permanent reduction to 10.
So I'd argue that there is some value in, you know, trying to aid to stop it. But I also agree with you that your first priority is probably just healing, if you can.
Yep, yep. Our next question here from user Weldrake. Can you use hero points to survive instant death via massive damage?
No. No, you cannot. I don't like that this is the situation, but you can use heroic recovery under two conditions. At the start of your turn, or when you would increase your dying condition. Massive damage or death effects circumvent the dying condition, and they don't happen at the start of your turn. You don't get time to have a heroic recovery because you dead.
Yep. Lauren's right. They just say that you die. You don't hit dying four. No, you just die. But if you're a kind GM, and I think I would be a kind GM here, I would say, yes, you can use heroic recovery in that brief instant between life and death, and use that to keep yourself alive. But you would be unconscious and all that other stuff that comes with death, as if you were with the dying condition. But by the rules, no, you just die. Sorry.
I would not be a kind GM. I would say, sorry, you're dying. But if they're taking massive damage, they probably made a mistake. So, like, I'm not going to protect you from your own mistakes. And if they're fighting death effects, I'm pretty careful about when I allow death effects to target my players. If they're going up against death effects, this is a story battle, and the death would make sense. It wouldn't be just some random BS. On top of that, you know, maybe I'll let them have a round or two where they can act and then they instantly die. Maybe I'll let that happen. We'd have to talk. From user Radium Elemental, how much attention do you pay to things that kill players instantly? Like powerful hazards or solo bosses, massive damage at level 1, or vampiric touch with the death trait?
For the most part, the game's pretty good about keeping those effects at least a little further out in character careers. So vampiric touch, for example, is a 3rd level spell, so you probably won't be seeing that even against the solo really tough boss at level 1. You might get a few levels under your belt before that happens. I think really the only one to really be concerned about
is massive damage at level 1, instantly killing you, which is actually a thing I ran into last week when I was running my beginner box. My players, well, the witch happened to take 26 damage with a critical failure on a reflex save, and that would have killed her outright, and I just didn't bring up the massive damage rule at all at that point, because it was meant to be a starting of a new campaign, and I didn't want to kill someone on our second session ever. But for the most part, I don't think you have to worry about it. By the levels that these kind of things start running into your players, they have different ways to mitigate some of that. At the very least, in theory, they hopefully have a hero point to let them reroll a save against these kind of things. But otherwise, just keep in mind, I guess, note that that possibility is there. So if you're running a lich, just do note that, oh, they do have Phantasmal Killer. Do I want to run that spell against someone? You don't have to use that just because it's there. Massive damage is kind of hard to avoid, especially if you roll out in the open for damage. But for the most part, you're the GM. You can decide, maybe I don't want to try to run this past the group just yet because it might end up killing them.
Yeah, back before second edition, I guess even still, I have big beef with insta-death things. Save or be dead. I can't stand those mechanics. Like, some groups have been playing for so long, and they have art that they made for their characters, and they have props, and, like, they wear a hat to the game, and then, like, two nat ones happen and they're dead. Just unceremoniously to, like, just some random hedge mage. Like, that's the worst. And I'm really glad that, like you said, that's a little bit fewer and farther between in this edition. I pay a lot of attention to who has it, though, and I make sure that if you're fighting somebody with these effects, you know that you're fighting someone who has those effects. You know, going into this, I'm going to have to deal with a situation that could instantly kill me. And it's a big deal, and it'll be a big story thing. That's how I'll run it. But all good things must come to an end. That's all we have for you today. Make sure to check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection, because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.